So, I'm perusing Board Gaming Podcast the other day, and I look and find that Charlie Eastman, the Little Wooden Cubist, has brought out a new podcast for 2010, and that he's planning on doing a monthly podcast from now on. Well, I thought, how can I let my illegitimate heir to podcasting become the main irreverent podcast? And I thought, I can't allow it. And so I thought, I'll tell you what, let's do another Happy Happy Board Game Loving. Nice. Good afternoon, it's the 19th of April and you join me in the Love Garden here at the Happy Happy Board Game Loving Headquarters. It's a beautiful day, it's warm, there's many women around serving me drinks and bringing me grapes. It's a great life being a board game podcaster, whatever the others might tell you about the hard work and the editing and the costs. It's a nice, easy life. The short route to celebrity, if I may be so bold as to say. So I thought we should do another podcast. It seems like a good idea. There can never be too many. And people always seem relatively happy when I bring out another one. So I waited until I've actually got some stuff to say, which is probably actually a first for this podcast. But I've actually got some content. Woo! And I shall bring it to you today. So we've got a usual top 10-y thing. Top 10, it's going to be a special this week. It's going to be a bigger look at the portion of the show, It Should Be a Game, or It Should Be a Game, or however the jingle goes. I'm going to look at 10 games that should be a game. Things that I've maybe done some game design towards in the past, or things that I just wish someone would do. So it will be a cry to people to get off your backsides and get designing these, because you'd at least have one sale in me, which should go about 0.3% towards paying back the costs to make the game. Every little helps. There's going to be a second chance, as always. There's going to be a look back at an old game which I played for the first ever time this week. There's always a saying about the cult of the new, with my little inverted fingers going on there. Cult of the new, about people that have to constantly play the new games. There's a few podcasters that love that kind of thing. Sadly for me, I'm a mere pauper. You know, I have the fame, I have the women, I have the garden, but I don't have money. And after all, you know, when I'm not podcasting, I do a bit of teaching, and you're never going to get rich off that. But so sometimes I have to look towards some of the older games, and this one I picked up in a charity shop a couple of years ago and never got around to playing, but we'll go into that later, just to whet your appetite. Very exciting. Then we'll have a few more of our usual segments, and I'll mumble on and ramble on and just blur on a bit for a while, and then we can all get excited about the Little Wooden Cubist's new podcast in May. So anyway, until that comes out, you might as well have a listen to this, and let's rock on. So anyway, in the spirit of randomising the segments, I once again headed out intrepidly onto the streets of Nagoya here in Japan to find a way to randomly choose the order of the segments for today. This time around, I went into a number of different shops. In Japan, it's quite common for good service, they say, where people will greet you as you go into your shop. Here's a little Japanese lesson for you. They'll say, Irashimase! Or something like that. And the teenage girls working there will go, Irashimase! Or something like that. Which is a bit annoying, but it's a welcome to the shop, which is all very nice. And then in a lot of stores, they'll proceed to follow you around the store to make sure your every whim and wish can be fulfilled, which is all very well, but I'm used to English service where they don't even look at you when you go into a shop, and where you need to ask if they've got something in a size or if you can try something on or something like that. And so I find it a bit strange having some short fella following me around about a foot behind me, looking over my shoulder, always making sure I'm okay. It makes me think that they think that I'm about to nick something, which, to be fair, I'm a big foreign guy, so it's quite possible, but I'm not. So instead, I just find it a little bit unnerving. So I played on that today for my randomizer. I went into the shops. I chose the shops from previous experience, and assigned each store one of my segments, and I walked into the shop, and I wandered around, and basically I wandered, and as soon as they started following me, I started a timer. When they stopped following me around, I turned the timer off, and the store that had the most following around gets to go number one in the segment list today, and so on. So which one won today? It's my month of gaming bliss. So the shop that I got followed around for the longest for 36 minutes and 24 seconds, was the ladies' shoe shop. Not necessarily surprising, but it means that the first segment is a look back at my last month and a bit of gaming. The games I've played, see if any are interesting, which is great for the podcast. Kind of bad for those who think I actually legitimately did these tests, as it was also first last time around. Anyway, so I'm going to look at quick look at the games played over the last month or so. It's been a good month of games, I'd say. I haven't played loads of games, but I've played a good variety. So 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. I've only managed 11 games. I've had a couple of very busy weeks at work, having to travel long distances to schools further away, while I'm not relaxing this garden anyway. And my wife's parents were here. My mother-in-law was sleeping in my bed. Thankfully I wasn't, but still it's a terrifying thought. And they're not the biggest games players, and we were busy popping off to Kyoto and Osaka and all the proper Japanese places. They weren't too interested in Nagoya, which is more of an industrial city, I guess. But on the positive side are Zimbabwean friends, who I'm desperately trying to get to come and be a part of the podcast with a little slot. Is still adamant that she's going to play through all of my games, which has started well. We've got a number played. I think it might slow down when we're left with Civilization and some Napoleonic games and Dimaka maybe. And I don't know if I've got enough friends over here that would play Funny Friends. We'll have to wait and see. But she's kept the games ticking over. She comes over maybe once a week, twice a week, and we play a game together with my wife too. So that's been good. And so this last 40 days, I'm not going to talk about one of the games, because that's the game I'm going to look at later on specifically. But we played a game of Vasco da Gama, which is the second game, which our friend was very happy about, because it's out of 17 or so games, different games that we've played, it's the first one she's won. So there was much rejoicing that time. I do like Vasco da Gama. Actually, the game about building ships and hiring a crew and sending them off around the new world, making landings and bringing you victory points and goods and things to make sending other ships easier in future. She won it by about 2 points in the end. It could have gone anywhere. I got off to a good start, sent some early ships in, which I tried to do the last time I played, and it worked. But it meant that I just ran out of steam towards the end, and I was just relying on my ending ship scoring points, which they did, but not enough. So all three of us went about it in a totally different way, and we were all quite competitive. The wife made one calamitous blunder the second turn from the end when she got confused over how many sailors she needed for one ship, so she actually couldn't send her ship. But if she'd been able to, she'd have been right up, you know, fighting for second place as well. So great game, lots of different ways to win, different approaches. It's all about trying to do as much as you can with as few moves as possible. Very Euro gamey, I guess, but I like it. It looks nice, it's got some nice pieces to it, and the bidding track, I talked about it in a previous episode, so go back if you want to listen to that, is great. So another Vasco da Gama, like it. Played Through the Desert, which is one of my sneaky high percentage win games. I love Through the Desert. I run a Knizia game. One of my top 10, and probably always will be, about playing the little pastel camels in the desert and making little chains of them and connecting oases for extra points and blocking off areas. Lovely little game. That was another win for me, so I'm quite smug about that. Me and the wife played Hellas, one of the Cosmos 2 player series games set in the, I don't know, the Greek Peloponnesian area, where you're playing sort of Spartans and Greeks taking control of little areas. It looks quite impressive when it's down on the table, considering it's just in a small box and you're attacking each other's cities with men or exploring with little plastic ships. It feels sometimes towards the end that I don't know, that a victory can come about in a very almost in a whimper, I guess. You're building up to try and get your 10 cities, building up this fight, and there's a bit of to and fro, and then one person just does an exploration at the end over their side of the map as their turn and finds another bit of land and wins. So, you know, it's not a great big fight for the end. It's a bit of a whimpery finish. I quite like it. I think it's the first time we played it in ages. I guess I could have said it got a second chance, but we'll play it from time to time, but there's better games to play. I had another go of Hollywood Blockbuster, or Dream Factory as it's now been released, which I kind of wish I'd held out for in a way, because it looks, the art on that looks really nice. And Hollywood Blockbuster is graphically the weakest of the re-implementations of the game. That's the auction game where you're bidding for different parts to make up a movie, the actors, the sound effects, the directors, the special effects, and so on and so on and so on, and making the movies. That was good. I got totally hosed, and in fact I wrote a thread on BoardGameGeek.com, the number one English language gaming website in the world, bemoaning the fact that my wife had made a move, even though she won by miles, to just hurt me, and I got a bit upset at that point and surprised myself at how upset I got. But I still quite like the game, so I'm definitely not averse to playing it again. Dice Town, played for the second time. That is the sneaky little I guess Wild Western themed dicey pokery game designed by Bruno Cathala and Ludovic Malblanc. That's I do like this game. I think I've talked about it in a previous episode as well. You each get a couple of five dice. You're shaking it almost in a Yahtzee style. You're choosing which ones you're going to keep, and then which ones you're going to shake again. And once all the dice, once everyone's shaken and kept all five of their dice, you go down this Wild West town street, and depending on what you got, you'll get different stuff. So if you had the most nines, you get to take some gold. If you have the most tens, you get to take the money. If you have the most jacks, you get to take a card from the general store. If you have the queens, you get to use the ladies from the saloon to go out and steal your cards, or keep people interested while you steal their cards. If you have them as kings, you become the new sheriff. If you have the best poke hand overall, you get to claim some land. And if you win nothing, you get to go and visit old Dr. Bad Luck, and you might end up with more than you would have got anyway. Great game. That's a game we played with the in-laws. They did like it. It went on for ages though, because when they make no thanks last for 45 minutes. So this game of Dice Down lasted over 2 hours. Can you believe it? The playing time was like an hour, and there was five of us. And luckily everyone enjoyed it, but everyone was getting tired towards the end. And I still like it, even when it dragged on for that long. I lost badly as usual. My wife won pretty much as seems to be standard. She's sneaky though. She spends the whole game going, "Oh no, I'm last, I can't win. Get Luke, he's winning, get him." And then she sneaks from wins. And, "Oh, I didn't realise I had won. I thought I was miles behind." But I'm used to that with her. So that's Dice Town. One player Carcassonne, Inns and Cathedrals, which we play at least once a month and have like 150 plays of that or something. That's our standard go-to game. A game of Antique, or Antique, which my local game store had on its shelf when I went in about a month ago. I got very excited because it had been in my top 10 for ages since playing it a few times. Really liked it, so I snaffled that up, bought it back, and we played three player and I won quite well, but we played it quite late at night and I made the blunder of although it fitted our acceptable playing time for that evening, I made the blunder of taking too long over the rules, I guess, and so it finished quite late, so I don't think either my wife or our friend were too excited by the end of it. So stupidly I should have saved it until we had a day or something like that, so hope that won't ruin it for them in future. But it was relatively close. I just sneaked out a couple of points at the end. Play Thurn and Taxis, which I'm going to talk about later, and two games of a delightful game, Dixit, which seems to be the flavour of the month at the minute. Everyone's going on about it. I know that Garrett's Games and Geekiness has talked about it, because I know that Shelley on the podcast is a big fan of this game. She's got every right to be. It seems to be getting almost universal appeal at the minute. Designed by Jean-Louis Rubira, but I guess as much importance should be placed on the artist, Marie Cadouat. Sorry, my French is not so good. Every word I learn in Japanese and every pronunciation, I forget my French. It's terrible. Anyway, Dixit came out a couple of years ago. Has jumped up to be ranked as the 92nd greatest game there's ever been in this whole earth. The 92nd, that's incredible. 92nd. Played it a couple of times. One with three of us. Yeah, and one with the full six of us. You can play between three and six, and the idea is you'll get dealt out these beautiful cards which have different images on. They're all different. They're kind of whimsical images that are open to interpretation, I guess. Every card could have numerous meanings behind it, and it reminds me a lot of Absolute Border Dash, and sort of fills that same kind of space, I guess, without people needing to write things down and be creative in that respect. So that's got something going for it. Everyone looks at their cards. One person is the storyteller. They choose one of their cards and make a statement about it. Maybe it's a saying, maybe it's a word, maybe it's a sentence. So the word, the word or sentence could be looking over my shoulder, or staring into space, or loneliness, or move into the country, gonna eat a lot of peaches, or something like that. And they choose one of their cards, put it face down. Everyone else has to look at their cards, choose the one that they think most matches that that statement or song lyric or whatever, place it face down. Storyteller takes them, shoves them up, lays them out. Everyone has to guess which card was the storyteller's card. If no one gets it right, then the storyteller's clue is too difficult, so they get no points, but everyone else gets a couple. If the clue is too easy and everyone got it right, then the storyteller gets no points, and everyone else gets 2 points. If some people get it right, but not everyone, then the storyteller's clue was perfect, and they get 3 points, and everyone that got it right gets 3 points. And if you're not the storyteller, but someone guesses your card because you're so smart and on everyone else's wavelength, you get a point for people guessing yours. So my wife is suspiciously good at this, and the first game we played, just the three of us, I was feeling confident and did okay, and thought I had, you know, was on everyone's wavelength. The second time, man, I must be some kind of visual and emotional idiot. I just can't get even what the right clues are, let alone the wrong clues. And I lay a card down thinking, oh, look at this, this is great, everyone will think it's mine. And no one falls for it. Oh, so... But that hasn't stopped me from loving the game, with its cards and its little score track with its little wooden bunnies, which makes no sense, but it's quite cute. I really like Dixit, and I hope I'm going to play it more. I think it plays better with more players, just because there's more choices of the cards. And I think I'll have to go back and get the add-on cards so there can be even more cardage. So that's something to look forward to. So yeah, that's what I've played this month. Like I say, with the exception of the review game later on. So let's kick on with whatever the next shop was that I went into.
Ew, the new discovery of the week.
So the next longest shop was the dog's clothes shop. Yes, you heard me right. It's quite popular to have dog clothes shops here in Japan. They followed me around for 23 and a half minutes, despite me telling them after a minute and a half that I don't actually have a dog and I was just looking for giggles. But they still tried their hardest to get me to buy something, bless them, and it worked. So if anyone needs a little doggy kilt, then I've got 23 of them and will accept orders on hamsteroffury@hotmail.co.uk. That is a changed email address because some dirty beggar broke into my hotmail.com address and then broke into email and tried to buy stuff on eBay. Absolutely appalling. So it's now hamsterfury@hotmail.co.uk until I can get it sorted. Anyway, we are looking at the new discovery, the new game I found, and this game is not a new game. This is a game I was talking about. You haven't had to wait long at all for this secret to come to pass, because the doggy clothes shop came up quicker than was expected. And this game was originally... I'll give you some clues, see if you can work it. Let's play along. Okay, so keep your hands down, raise your hands when you think you got the answer, and keep it in your head, and when I say it, we can say it together, and you can prove how smart you are. This game was originally published in 1983. It's had a number of editions since then. I have the 2000 Ravensburger edition. It was designed by a number of people, including Dorothy Garrels, Fritz Ifland, Manfred Burgraff, Werner Scherer. And it plays 3 to 6 players, but can play with 2. The playing time is suggested at 45 minutes, but on our first play it took us over an hour and a half to 2 hours, because again I was playing with my wife and a friend, and my wife suddenly went into double guessing herself really badly, bless her, and the more she tried to get out of it, the longer it took. An alternate name for this game is Interpol. It is ranked 620th greatest game ever currently on Board Game Geek, with an average rating of 6.53, and has a number of games which have come out since then that probably owe quite a lot to it. The game, are you all smart enough really? You ready to go? Cool. The game is Scotland Yard. Yes. This game is, I guess, for want of a better phrase, a mass market game. It was relatively popular in England. I had friends that had the game, I just never played it. It is a game where one person takes on the role of the mysterious Mr. X, a downright dirty thief, or dirty murderer or dirty mugger, whatever you want him to be. They're vague about it. To keep my wife happy, I said that he was arrested for shooting BB guns at bunnies or something like that. His job is to run around London all sneaky, trying to escape the cops or the bobbies or the police or the fuzz or the whatever you want to call them, chasing after him. It's a lot like Fury of Dracula, where one person plays Dracula and they're trying to hide and run around Europe evading capture and attack from the vampire hunters. This is similar. You're trying to last 22 to 24 rounds evading capture, and then after that you're free to run off into the sunset. So you get this big map of London, which when you first open it, especially for the version I've got, which is the, I guess, more mature, less colourful version they came out with to mark the more mature, less colourful year 2000. The map's quite terrifying. It's of London, it looks fussy, there's lines and dots everywhere, numbers everywhere for all the different places you can be. So an area is a circle with a number in it, and then they're all linked to each other with three different coloured lines, either the subway or buses or taxis. So both Mr. X and the police, because the police must be quite poor in that they can't own police cars in London at the moment, so they get given it as well. You get tickets to use the subway, tickets to use the buses, and tickets to use taxis. Mr. X, everyone gets given a starting position, and then Mr. X gets three turns to move around, then he has to reveal where he is, and then I guess the game is truly on, and the people playing the police talk to each other, trying to work out where Mr. X is, move their people to try and capture him. Mr. X tries to break through their advancing lines secretly and use all the different transport systems to beat them, get across maybe to the other side of the city, or double bluff, send them off and try and avoid capture. But then a few rounds later he has to reveal himself again, then another few rounds after that again. So you have to time it so that you're as far away as possible when you have to reveal yourself. If you're only a move or two away, then the police can find out where you are and really start pushing in on you. The police win if they move one of their policemen into the same space as Mr. X. At that point, the person playing Mr. X has to reveal that they are indeed in that place, and then they're captured and the police rejoice, and Mr. X goes to the clink. So the game comes with a sneaky little black visor, which on first thought just looks like a bit of a gimmick, but actually they say that it's so that you can wear it so no one can see your eyes when you're looking at the map, which is very cool. Mine came from a charity shop, and so the lace that's tied to the visor was looking a bit grubby, so I decided just to wear my own cap instead, which did just as good a job. It's great because you're looking at the board. You don't want people to know where you're looking, because at certain points you could be anywhere on the board and you don't want to tip them off. So you have a look, then you write down this little pad what space you're moving to, then over it you place the type of card that you're using. Are you using a subway to get there, or a bus or a taxi to get there? And then you reveal your last mode of transport, and then the police try and work out where you are, because not all spots have an underground or a subway, not all spots have a bus station either. Everywhere can be got to by taxi, but yeah, so you're just trying to evade capture. Mr. X also has some sneaky little Mr. X tokens, which he can play instead. That's like a wild card, so you can use them to make any form of transport you want, and it throws the police off your scent, because then they're like, oh no, did he take a taxi, did he take a bus, did he take the underground, because then you could go to totally different places. You can even use those tokens to go down the Thames on a boat, which I didn't actually do. I was Mr. X and I did escape, but I didn't use the boat, but the other guys were a bit freaked out the fact I might, so we're constantly covering it. So just the chance, because the police can't use the boat, So they were a little bit wary about me being able to do it and suddenly leap across the board somewhere. And that's generally the idea of the game. The police players all start with a certain number of tickets, and when they use one of their tickets, say a bus ticket, they give it to Mr. X, who can then use it. When the police run out of a certain type of ticket, they can't take that transport anymore. So they only have four underground tickets. Once they've used the underground 4 times, and the underground's great for jumping across the map in big chunks, once they've done that, they can't use the underground anymore. If they use up all their bus, they can't use the bus anymore. So they've got to be wary about the things they use to get Mr. X. So we played it. It took nearly 2 hours in the end. But I must admit, at times, as Mr. X, I was so nervous and terrified. It was so good. My blood was racing, my heart was pumping. I'd hear them talking about where they thought I was, and sometimes they got it totally wrong, and I was feeling all smug, like, hey, they think I'm here, and I'm all the way over here. But then sometimes they were suggesting places which were getting on, near to where I was. And at one point, I tried to bluff them all by doing the opposite of what they were going to think I was going to do. But it involved moving one space away from one of the police. And if they'd have moved in that position, and they had a choice of 3 places to go, if they'd have moved back there, I'd have been got. And my heart was going, and I was like worried that they were going to find out where I was. But I managed to get away in the end, and oh, it was a relief. So, as Mr. X, I really enjoyed it. As the police, my wife really started going into every move really deeply, and I think by the end, our friend was getting a bit tired, and so she was making the moves a lot quicker. And then my wife was getting frustrated at herself for taking too long. But I think if we played it again, she'd get the vibe of it a lot more if we started it a bit earlier. I think so too. And they seemed to enjoy being the police as well. They wanted to be the police together to try and get me. And at times they nearly did, and I was trying to throw them off, and they just knew exactly where I was going. So that was good for them. They enjoyed it. I can't wait to play it again. Really like it. I don't know why it's been this long since I played it. I think it's 'cause it needs 3 at least, and normally it's just me and the missus, and so we'll play something else. But yeah, game really good. If you can track it down, Scotland Yard. I don't know if you can get it new in many places now, but especially in the UK, you can get it in charity shops quite easily. I think I got it for £2 or something, which is what, $3.50 or a bit under 1,000 yen or something. It's nothing. Actually, a lot under 1,000 yen. It's nothing. So yeah, if you can find it, get it. Scotland Yard, you'll be able to find it on eBay, you'll be able to find it in charity shops. Get it, play it. Really, really good. I recommend it. I give it 13 donuts out of 14. There we go.
It's the feature of the week, the feature of the show, the feature for all of us.
It should be a game. Yes, it should be a game, and it is the feature, as my really cleverly melded together little title sequence there tells us. So the next shop that took the longest was the hat shop, or milliner's, as I like to call it. Being a well brought up and classy young lad that I am, they followed me around for 17 minutes trying to sell me a beret of all accompaniments, and when I turned them down they were very upset. But anyway, that meant that it's time for the feature and the top 10 things that should be a game. It's been a while since I've done this, I think, and I've been thinking about stuff recently again, about subjects that would be really interesting in games for me. Some of you may know that I'm a hobby game designer, I guess, in that it's not like I make any kind of money out of that, and to be honest, all my fame comes from the podcast. Whereas the games are just a bit of fun, just to keep my eye in, and you never know, maybe I might get lucky one day and design something good. So for those of you that know anything about my games, I designed a game called Tor, which proved prohibitively expensive to sell. So I've been doing some print and play at cheap cost for people because it's quite a lot of files. That's got 19 ratings at 7.12 or something, which ain't bad. Cycling game. There's a game called Behind the Nine, which is a print and play nine ball pool game. Again, all the files and all this sort of stuff is on boardgamegeek.com, so check it out there. Yeah, Behind the Nine, which I entered for a little sports dice competition that someone ran. Then I got a game called Paper Cricket, which is based around something I used to play as a kid years ago, which I came up with when I was little. And First Past the Post, which is a politics game which I made years ago now, which, to be honest, isn't that good, so I wouldn't bother too much about it, unless, you know, the British general elections are coming up now, so if you fancy leading the blue, red, yellow or green party to power, then check First Past the Post. All the files are available to download, and, you know, it could do with a few more ratings. It's only got like 3, and I think one of those was from someone that thought it was another game. So anyway, that's that. So I write down a lot of stuff about games. I'd like working on games. I've got some I'm working on now, which I might talk about later. But some of these games that I'm listing are games I've tried. In fact, most of these games I've tried to do something about or got so far, but just got a bit stumped. And it's just left me thinking, oh man, I wish there was this game anyway, and that, you know, it wasn't down to me to try and come up with it or something, and that someone with better skill, better ability, and more money, access to a publisher or something, could do, or with better graphical skill than me, because I suck at drawing. But yeah, someone that could take it and run with it. So here's top 10. If you like the sound of this, then I don't know, write to your MP or something and demand that someone makes one of these games. That's always the best way to get things working, I've been told. Anyway, let's get started. The top 10 special feature things that should be a game. Right, so first up, this isn't a 10 to 1 ranking system or anything like that, so those of you that hate my little number 10 things will be relieved. I'm just going to go through them in the list as opposed to a big countdown. So the first game I've got written down is to be based on like a video game that's been around for a while. There's been a few versions of it through the years. The last one came out a couple of years ago, and that is Fallout. The game based around post-nuclear apocalyptic world where people scrabble for survival. This is a game that I was looking at working on. I think I'd called it Black Rain or something, which is very clever, don't you think? And the idea would be there'd be a big post-apocalyptic world where water was in a bit of short supply, and the water that you could get was contaminated, and the bit I got stuck on, to be honest, was whether to make it a single person game or multiplayer game. And single person games are tricky because you're limiting your field, but for something like a Fallout style game, the storytelling aspect to me seemed really important. So it was you could go to different cities and do different jobs for people, and if you did simple jobs for them, you'd get in their favour, and therefore you could do bigger jobs and sort of become friendly with them, and they give you stuff. And your job in the game that I was writing at was to re-kickstart your small town. Like, there was a few of you stragglers left a number of years, however many, after the big bombs went off, and you needed to kickstart that community again. So you were trying to set up solar stills. See, I was stealing stuff from Dune and everything as well. Set up solar stills and to bring any fresh water down, set up like rudimentary farms, or try and find livestock, or and build shelters, and fight wandering tribal warrior types that would come in to get you. Stuff like that. Says Mad Max in it as well, to be honest. But you know, everyone loves those. Fallout plus Mad Max plus Dune, and most people would be quite excited, right? And then the idea would be that it wouldn't just be one character. So you have one character, but then at a certain point, You'd return to that town, and then you would have an offspring who would take some of the skills of your guy and maybe get an extra skill. So you're almost developing your next character. So when your first character died, you would then get to move on with the second guy. But then, and you know, four times was my idea, four generations. And then as the time went on, and as you were setting up better water supply or whatever, so at the start it'd be really tough and rough. By the end, you're setting up you've got water set up and, you know, better farms or whatever, but there'd be a shortage of the stuff like the scrap metal, which there was at the beginning, so that throughout the game there'd constantly be a change in what you're fighting. At the start you were fighting just to survive, you know, to eat and drink, but by the end you were fighting over the remnants of raw material. You know, you could eat and drink, but your raw materials to advance from there would be hard fought over. And I wanted that, and putting it in multiplayer seemed tricky, and that's why I got a bit stuck. And I've got all the writings out for some of it, but then I just really ran out of ability to do it. But yeah, so a Fallout style game, oh man, I'm really excited talking about it again now, would be brilliant. So I don't think I can do it, so please someone make something like it, or point me in the direction of a game that mixes all those ingredients. Anyway, so that's number one. Number two is a Sherlock Holmes type game, like almost like murder mystery games. And I think by their very nature, it's difficult. You have the series of games, excuse my clicking, 221B Baker Street, and the expansions from 1975, designer Ant the Productions, John N. Hansen, published by numerous groups, where you play as Sherlock Holmes and go around picking up clues, solving cases. Now, of course, the problem is once you've solved cases, there's no need to go back, so it's an absolute nightmare to make a replayable mystery game in that respect. And you have these games like the new Mystery Express game, which has come out, where you're trying to solve a crime, and I've heard mixed reviews on it, but the big selling point is that it's a limited amount of time. The train is moving along and you've only got until a certain number of stations to complete it and to find the you know, the criminal that's there, and who did it and so on. But just something that was clue and murder mystery based that could be reused and replayed more often seemed interesting. And the setting for Sherlock Holmes, right, that Victorian England, that very interesting, the you know, the dirty back alleys, the little bobbies with their little hats and their truncheons and whistles, and the mist and the fog, and the Jack the Ripper type characters running around. No, they're not nice guys, but there's a whole intrigue and mystery in that area, which if someone could capture that vibe in a game and somehow make it replayable as well, oh, I'd have it. And I'm sure I'm not the only one. Isn't that right, listeners? Some of you would have that too, yeah? Yeah, yeah, of course you would. So that's number two, something Sherlock Holmesy. All right, number three is another video game you won. And it's based on my favourite game that I've played in a long time. And that was Heavy Rain. I don't know how many of you have played Heavy Rain, that came out early this year by Quantic Dreams. Man, the guys that made I can't remember what it's called now. Fahrenheit. That was its worldwide release, apart from the US where it had a different name, which I can't remember what it is. But anyway, in Heavy Rain, you take on the role of a few different characters whose lives, I guess, interact with each other, and it's almost like an interactive movie where you've got to play through. But the gameplay was good, but the biggest thing was the weight of moral decisions. So when you had to do something and make a really big decision, it played on you. My heart at times was racing. I was left like, oh, what do I do? What do I do? At certain points, those that have played it will know what I'm talking about. Those that haven't, I'm not going to spoil it. All I'm going to say is you should get the game. If you've got a PS3, get Heavy Rain. Buy a PS3 for it. Seriously, it's the best gaming experience. Oh, man. But, so, immediately after that, on a forum ago, and I started writing some story, a similar kind of noirish crime story with a couple of friends trying to get it to interact, but it proved difficult to keep it going. But then I was thinking about a game of it and about how you could set up the streets and have different characters and different places they could be at and different clues, and trying to create a really a really dour mood to it, a really murky mood to it, with a murderer and like a mass murderer or whatever, and trying to solve the case and everyone's life being intertwined, but again making it replayable, so it wasn't always the killer wasn't always the same person, or the clues you get didn't always lead to the same person. And so I was trying to work on that, and it's similar to the Sherlock Holmes. I think it's just the setting and the mood would be very different, and the setting and the mood to me is very important for the two different games. And but the thought of being able to play Heavy Rain with a few friends at a table, you know, where the game you take on the role of four characters, but then in theory those four characters are taken on by four different players, and if one person does something different then another player can't do something, or you know, someone finds a clue at a certain house and then someone goes there later on and that clue's no longer there, but then play it again and the other one goes there first and the clue gets taken, something seemed really interesting to me. And I think, again, I think there's a market for it, but I think that just the difficulty of doing it and the storytelling aspect of it will probably make it just a dream, sadly. So number three, Heavy Rain. So I've gone really serious all of a sudden. It's very unlike me. Number four, everyone likes San Juan. Rave San Juan, the card version of Puerto Rico, which is either the first or second greatest game ever, depending on what the current vibe is for people rating Puerto Rico or Agricola down as a one, so that their favourite gets to be number one. San Juan is my preferred go-to of that and Puerto Rico. It's card-based, where you're building a town or a settlement and then producing goods and selling them on. For a while I looked at a version set in a hospital. So the idea would be really tongue-in-cheek, almost taking theme hospital-esque vibes. So you're setting up your hospital, you start with a, an out clinic and a pharmacy or something. And then there'll be a pile of patients which people can bid on to try and treat or something, and they've all got different sicknesses wrong with them, like my foot in mouth or something, or pot head where someone had a pot on their head or something, and trying to cure them. And then you'd be building, with the money you get you can build more stuff for your hospital, so you can build hospital wards or psychologists or better machines for working out what's wrong with people, nice staff training facilities or something like that. And so that was the idea. It was basically theme hospital meets San Juan, but that's not a bad thing, surely. But again, I got halfway on that and then just ran out of steam on it, but I like the idea of that and I think someone should take it up. So there you go, some kind of San Hospital theme Juan, if you like. That's my number four. Number five is something that I've gone back to a few times, and but there's been an influx recently, since Kalos especially, of the worker placement games. They're everywhere now, and they're a bit played out to a point. You got your Agricola, you got your Stone Age, you got your La Havre, you know, you got your Carson City. Worker placement's good because it's a nice mechanic, I like it. Everyone's got the same number of guys, at least at the start, and then you choose what you want your supply of men to do. So your strategy is up to you and up to what other people do. But I thought about linking that to being in a rock band. There's a couple of Rocky games out. Not the boxer Rocky, you know, rock music. But my thing on that was that everyone would take a band, and then you'd get every turn would be a month. And you had your four weeks of the month. So each week you get to do something. So you could do recording, or go down the pub, or practice, or try and get a gig, or trash your hotel room or something. But each of these would give you different stuff. So some will give you musical lore, so your ability to music would increase. Some will give you fans, some will give you
stardom, and they will affect each other, like move you up on a track or give you stardom cubes or something. And the idea that I had would be you played for up to a year with the aim to get to Rockfest, this big rock festival, and the band that were the most famous or whatever would headline it and they'd be the winners. But throughout there'd be a few smaller festivals which would be like the scoring rounds. And then so play a few rounds, have a big scoring round, a few rounds, big scoring round, a few rounds, big scoring round, a few rounds, boom, Rockfest. And that was the idea, worker placement. Got relatively far on that. That's not totally on the back burner, but to be honest, if someone made a rock band game that was far better than that, then brilliant. Because I think, again, everyone kind of wants to be a rock star, especially Charlie Eastman, he keeps going on about it. I think it'll work. I think there'd be market for it. So something rock band based, if it was worker placement, then that's just seems to be one of the things that's in vogue at the minute. If not, then just get some kind of rock band themed game on, preferably one that comes with hardcore rocking stuff. You know, I did the little rock symbol there, which is completely pointless on this podcast. Let's all take a moment out to do the rock symbol. The old, you know, you got your fingers up and your thumbs up. Let's give it, yeah, rock band. Okay. Anyway, that's enough of that. Number six. Why are we only at number six? Grief. Number six, something I looked at briefly. I'm interested in stuff like the SAS and all that military stuff on that. The especially the short-term, breach missions, like the hostage rescues, the wham-bam stuff where they spend weeks watching somewhere and preparing, and then bang, they're in and out 5 minutes and they've sorted it. Really interesting for me the way it's done. And then playing again Call of Duty 2, the video game, the Modern Warfare 2, sorry. And there's a couple of missions where you're doing that sort of breach and clear. You put the breaches on, bang, the door blows open, it goes slow motion, bang, 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 get the hostage. It's in a game I was looking at it where you'd plan your entry or something, and then you'd try and create momentum. So the idea was you play as many cards ahead as possible with your plan, which would show a quick momentum. But if you didn't, but if you made mistakes, then your momentum would be blown and the bad guys would get the upper hand or something. But something that was just that kind of game seemed interesting. But I don't think the market would be quite as big on it. But, you know, I'd buy it. Something that's like a hostage rescue, short, sharp. There probably is games out there that are very similar. I'm sure people could tell me numerous games that are like it. But I've never played them. But if you can point me in that direction, then rocking, I like that. Back to the rock sign. Yeah! But anyway, yeah, some kind of SASC hostage rescue situation. Number seven is coming off the back of Scotland Yard, and also linking back to something I talked about years ago with Metal Gear Solid should be a game, like an infiltration game. Someone plays an infiltrating spy, everyone else plays the defensive team, and so it would be like Fury of Dracula Scotland Yard, in that person's trying to sneak around and infiltrate a base away from everyone else's guards. But every now and again there'd be a radio signal comes through from his headquarters, and he'd briefly appear to everyone on where he was, and then he'd vanish again. So it's, you know, it's not breaking any new moulds, but few games do these days, do they? I think that'd be a really nice theme, sneaking around, subterfuge, maybe something James Bond-esque or more like the military-esque of sneaking around, vanishing off into the dark, poof, firing off smoke grenades, adding some weapons play to the Scotland Yard mechanic. So there we are, number seven, some kind of infiltration-y subterfuge game. Number eight, I love cricket. There's only about five countries in the world that do, but there's lots of people in those countries. Well, India's got 1 million, the Brits have got 60 million, the Australians, there's about seven Australians, something like that. The Kiwis, there's only about three left in the country, but there's about 40 million of them around the world. And, South Africa, there's a few South Africans, isn't there? And so cricket would have a market, not huge, but something cricket based for those Americans that don't know what cricket is. It's baseball but lasts longer, and yet it's somehow much more interesting than baseball. Something cricket based, based around the Cricket World Cup or something. You could play it using mechanics derived from the excellent World Cup game, which I'm a big fan of and a big preacher of the greatness of Sean Derrick's World Cup game. Something like that. Cricket, I like cricket. There should be more cricket games. Number 9 would be a little kiddies game about raising a little doggy woggy, and you can play it with your mummy and your daddy, and you can feed your doggy woggy, and you can brush its fur and take it for walks, and it'd have a secret underground fan base of hardcore gamers that say it's actually really cool because it's actually one of those kids games that adults really like too, and therefore it'd have to be really good. But I still like it. I'd play it because I'm one of those pretentious types. So yeah, some game about a little dog or a pet or something, and it's fun for all the family, and it's a proper game, and everyone likes it, and everyone finishes the game by being smiley and happy, and their lovely dog has grown to a lovely big dog or has been run over or something. But you know, we can all play along together. So number 9, a doggy woggy game. So number 10, going from happy kiddie stuff to something a bit more depressing, I guess, in a way, but there's something interesting in the concept of not being able to get out of something alive or something like that. Like there's the game Falling, a little card game which I was fortunate to get as part of my Secret Santa, where everyone's playing people that are falling from the sky, and you're all going to hit the ground, but the aim is to be the last person to hit the ground. You're the winner if you're the last person to hit the ground. You know, you're all going to hit the ground, but be the last person to hit the ground. Something like that, I guess. More of that kind of game. You know, you're all going to drown in the soup, but try and be the last person to drown in the soup. You're all going to be eaten by zombies, but just be the last one to be eaten by the zombies. You know, it's not like you can boast about it afterwards when you're all zombies, but you might as well try and be the last one. Or by werewolves, or by Vikings, or by the hula girls, or something. Just something like that, where everyone is not necessarily going for the win. The win is just being the person that survives the longest, I guess. And it's kind of morbid, but there's market for morbidity, isn't there? TV shows us that. So, yeah, they're my 10. They're all slightly different from each other. If any of them sound interesting to you, then you should make them. If you want to question me on anything or give me suggestions, which would be nice, because you know, I'm always looking for suggestions for more games, then please email me. As I said before, it's changed, so it's now Hamster of Fury, HamsterofFury, that's two Fs, @hotmail.co.uk. That'd be great. In fact, if there's anything you want to contact me on for that, please do. I throw out my desire again, I guess. If anyone wants to write anything for the show, little review, send me a recording to that email, any notes, any letters, anything like that. I don't deserve them because my podcast isn't frequent enough and it's not good enough, to be honest, but if anyone wants to send anything, please do. I'll read it out, or if it's a private letter, then I'll enjoy reading it. So again, to the same email address, or drop me a geek mail. My username on Board Game Geek is Hamster of Fury. I'm the one with the avatar of the Japanese girl grinning and looking down, then grinning, then looking down, then grinning, then looking down, then grinning, looking down, grinning, looking down, grinning, looking down, and so on and so on. You can get lost on it for a few days if you're not careful. But anyway, I was possibly thinking about having more stuff for the show, but we've hit an hour already. Well, it's already for me, it's probably felt like 4 for you, but I've got better things to do with my day. The women are getting bored, I need to keep them busy bringing me stuff, and there's probably something excellent on TV or radio soon, so I'd rather be doing that. But thanks for listening, and I'm going to try and get another one out before too long. So like I say, if you've got anything you want to shove on the show, get it to me. I'll take most anything. I'm not fussy. Beggars can't be choosers. And I'll catch you again soon. I promise it won't be too long. After all, I've got a high reputation to maintain. So enjoy your gaming. Keep it real. Listen to the good podcasts. And I'll see you soon. Ta-ra. Just checking to see if anyone actually listens all the way to the end of a podcast or not. I'm so glad that you do.